Is it on? It's on. Excellent. Okay, right. Welcome to Distant Island on the 6th of March, 2009. On tonight's show, we have someone from London Coalition Against Poverty, commonly known as LCAP, on. Someone from Climate Rush, and we have a set of Nintendo dubstep from Feedback, amongst other little bits and pieces. So, first of all, we're going to go into a track. Here it is.
Que me hace feliz mirar para arriba y no pensar en nada y respirar profundo, como si esta tierra no estuviera contaminada. A veces pienso en echar un quejío que ha atravesado los senderos y las montañas para crear tu futuro, donde las conciencias no estuvieran engañadas. Voy a ocupar una casa en donde los uniformes ya no pinten nada y donde las decisiones sean tomadas de manera asamblearia. Alternativa libertaria contra los vecinos. Alternativa libertaria.
Alternativa Libertaria by Canteca de Macao, and you can actually download that album off their website. So I can't remember what the website is, but you can download it.
If you can spell it.
The name of the band is C A N T E C A D E M A C A O.
Excellent. Great.
What does that mean?
I have no idea.
Okay. Excellent.
Answers on a postcard.
Well, we're sitting here with Charlotte from London Coalition Against Poverty, and we have you in tonight to talk about the Week of Action and the Welfare Reform Bill. Now, you're calling it the Welfare Abolition Bill, but why don't you give us some background about what that is and why it's so terrible?
Sure. Well, the Welfare Reform Bill, or as you said, the Welfare Abolition Bill, is basically a bill that is being rushed through Parliament. It's being voted on the 17th of March. That's just over a week away. It introduces massive changes to the welfare state in Britain. It abolishes income support, which basically abolishes the principle that people are entitled to welfare if they're in need. It also introduces workfare, sort of people having to work in order to get their benefits. Lots of other things. It sort of increases like conditionality for claimants. For example, if people miss an interview, they'll get docked a week of their benefits. There'll be compulsory drug testing that people could be put forward for drug testing, and if they refuse or if they don't comply with their drug treatment plan, they'll lose 28 weeks of benefits. Wow. It also imposes that mothers have to register the father of their child when they register their birth. So there's loads of different things, including it privatises a lot of the job centre work that goes on at Job Centre Pluses will be privatised, so that it could be offered to private companies who'll be paid for the number of people they get into work. Mm-hmm. So there's loads and loads of terrible things in the bill.
Wow. Okay. And so maybe you can explain the concept of workfare, or what is that? I mean, it sounds like the welfare to work programs from the US that didn't work back in the 90s, is it?
Yeah, no, it's very similar. I mean, what the British government are calling it is work for your benefit. and basically, it forces people who are on job seekers allowance to work for as little as £1.73 an hour for their benefits. And as you said, in the 90s in America, it was introduced, excuse me, and was pretty much a disaster. Sort of, there was lots of... it was shown that people were less likely to be able to find paid employment if they were doing workfare. Mm-hmm. People were also not covered by employment regulations in America, and so were forced to work in unsafe conditions, as well as it being demeaning and not less able to get jobs. And although in Britain it's not decided how, or they haven't said how they'll introduce it, it's very worrying. And the British government themselves have done research and found that people are less likely to get paid employment if they're on the workfare schemes. So,
yeah, interesting, and they're not really explaining how that programme is going to be implemented either.
Not yet. I mean, the bill's been rushed through and there's not been much time for people to question things, and there's lots of things in the bill haven't been explained exactly how they'll work.
Mm-hmm. What's the reaction been to the bill in the House of Commons? Has there been much opposition to it?
In the House of Commons, the third and final vote will be on the 17th of March. So it's been voted on twice before and gone into committee that have reconsidered it. There's been lots of protests from sort of other organisations who are against it, but there's been, well, sort of quite a bit of a PR campaign by the government to get support around the bill, and obviously we're very worried that it will pass.
And that propaganda campaign, if you will, is that the welfare thieves, the benefit thieves campaign that you just see those awful posters?
Yeah,
everywhere.
You've probably seen them around on phone boxes. Yeah, and I think it's quite a cynical campaign by the government, who a few months before introducing the bill have had this big campaign about benefit thieves. And at the moment, benefit fraud is at its lowest ever level, mm-hmm. but they've decided to have a campaign around the same time as introducing a bill that stigmatises people claiming benefits. And you've obviously seen the pictures on the adverts, and it plays up to stereotypes of people claiming benefits, as well as connecting sort of the idea that people claiming benefits are potentially like committing fraud or...
Yeah, exactly. And so the week of action is against this bill, and in a way it's a bit reformist, and you know, it's for LCAP to engage in this kind of activity. Shouldn't it be aiming towards, say, trying to create an alternative, you know, not having to rely on the benefit system? I guess, you know, there is an argument to be made for abolishing welfare.
I think there is, and LCAP isn't an anarchist group, although there are lots of anarchists in the group. But I suppose, speaking for myself, in my ideal world, there wouldn't need to be a welfare state, and people would be supporting each other sort of in communities. But that doesn't exist at the moment. and there's not another option for a lot of people that currently rely on the welfare state in the UK. There aren't other options if they all choose to live outside the state. There are sort of small groups of people that live collectively and support each other, but they're not open to vast numbers of people joining them.
Yeah.
And it is about helping people here and now while working towards sort of a better future, potentially without welfare.
Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. And maybe you can tell us about the Week of Action and what's going to be coming up next week and who's involved in it and what's happening.
Definitely. Well, the Week of Action's been called by LCAP, by Feminist Fight Back, and by DAN, who are the Disabled People's Direct Action Network. There are lots of things going on all week. There's leafleting at job centres to raise awareness of the bill and get more people involved. There's a sort of a big direct action on Monday in central London, which is an LCAP and Feminist Fight Back direct action. There's another on Wednesday, which is called by LCAP and DAN. There's also going to be pickets outside job centres on the Monday before the bill, so on the 16th. And we're very up for people coming to get involved. So if anyone wants to come and join us on the actions, they can contact us either via the website or phone number I'll give out later to come and join. We're also very keen for other people to have their own actions or set up their own pickets outside job centres. And there's a toolkit on the LCAP website with lots of more information about the bill and ideas about things that people can do to against it.
Yeah, excellent. So is LCAP doing anything else at the moment, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, well, we've got lots of different projects that we're working on. More information's on the website. But we are organising around sort of homeless persons units, and sort of gatekeeping around preventing people being able to register as homeless and being entitled to accommodation. We also organise around conditions in temporary accommodation, as well as things around workers and people that are claiming benefits.
Do you have any sort of reflections on the fact that they're trying to take away benefits, but they're bailing out loads of financial assistance?
Definitely. And I think it, it's very ironic that while they're trying to force through this bill that's cutting benefits for carers and cutting maternity benefit and decreasing the entitlement of a lot of people to any benefits, they're bailing out bankers and banks for billions of pounds. And obviously, it's like the campaign on the bus stops. There's a thing about sort of trying to portray people as criminals and trying to portray people who claim benefits potentially as criminals or not deserving of benefits, but people that have caused their own mess and crisis in the banks are getting basically a blank check.
Do you think this was sort of anticipating a load of people needing to start claiming benefits? Because the credit crunch happened sort of back in September last year, and then this campaign targeting benefit thieves started in October.
Yeah, it was in October.
And then all of a sudden this welfare reform bill or welfare abolition bill comes by, and it's almost like really strangely timed. So perhaps I'm a little bit paranoid.
Possibly. I think that it is obviously the bill's coming in at a time when there are going to be more people that are relying on welfare and on the welfare state. I think that it's unfortunately coming in sort of, and there's nothing in the bill to help people who are coming onto benefits, or there's no sort of proactive work to support people to find employment if that's what they want to do. It's all about forcing people or penalising people that don't follow the roads that are set out for them.
And this abolition bill, the welfare abolition bill, what kinds of people are going to be targeted particularly if it actually goes through? Who will be some of the worst affected?
Definitely the worst affected are everyone that's claiming benefits potentially, in that they'll have a lot more conditionality, that they'll have a direction that they've set by an employment advisor of things that they have to do, and they'll be penalised if they don't do them. They'll be single mothers, in terms of the cuts to income support, will be hit very severely. Single parents will also be forced back to be doing work-related activity once their children reach 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And also disabled people who find it much harder to find employment will be penalised because they'll have less income.
Mm. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us about that.
Thank you. Shall I just give details of the website and
yes,
the phone
please.
Number? the website is lcap.org.uk, and if anyone's interested in joining us with the actions next week, they can contact us on 07748052289.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Am I doing the thing now? About the thing? Yeah, okay. Yeah, thanks. Oh, right, sorry, I shouldn't have been checking that on air. Thanks very much for that. I'm just going to say that there's an eviction party on tomorrow night in the Victoria in Deptford. They're out next week, so this is the last chance to have a party there. Interterrestrials are playing, The Restarts, Tarantism, Autonomads, and Barber Look. Then there's going to be Siren Sound System as well, playing drum and bass, dubstep, Recognize Sound System, reggae, punk things. It'll be good. And we're going to go into a track now. Which track is it?
Nigerians.
We'll stop giving out about Nigerians by Jinx Lennon from Dundalk.
Stop giving out about Nigerians. Can I tell you what? Look around your faces. Take yourself back for a council hasn't got stuff in the back. And the only way you get when there is if the colour's black. Well, the reason that you didn't get a house for your son was your son was a bollocks from day numero one. Poor in those I'm living in, my dumping in the feet. What's wrong with some colour in the street? Yeah, a man is talking hard to hard as if he is my friend. Well, he's not my friend, so let's put that forever at an end. If I was lying in the street, go public from my head, the same individual would probably beat me down for dead. He says, Iranians are out there living in next door, and you shouldn't see the way that they left the kitchen floor. Here is a man who got a bad kid for 60 grand, and he spent it all on drink when he got it in his hand. Will you stop giving out about Nigerians? Tunis, how you wish, and look around your faces. Say you're sort of like for a council house and got stuff in the back. And the only way you get one there is if the colour's black. Well, the reason that you didn't get a house for your son, the son was a bollocks from day numero one. Foreigners are living in with comfort in the feet. What's wrong with some colour in the street? Yeah, chatting about bananas when the Asian doctor walked past. What you weren't saying that last week when he put your arm in a cast. He put one in place, you found about his face. Half an hour later you were grimacing with hate. Now it's a Barbara cafe, you found in a spay. Your two poor Croatian girls trying to earn a week's pay. Seeing all the foreigners and taking all the jobs. Weren't you the one in London on a modern street you bought? Will you stop giving out about Nigerians? Say your wish, and look around your faces. Say your son applied for a casual house and got off the back. The only way he get one there is if the colour's black. Well, the reason that you didn't get a house for your son, the son was a box from day numero one. Foreigners are living in with comfort and defeat. What's wrong with some colour in the street? Yeah.
Was a preview of the next track, so wait up for that one. So just to quickly mention, we're going to be doing a special one-off show in the middle of the week, special for the G20 stuff happening on April 1st. So definitely try and tune in for that if you're not busy elsewhere, you know, getting up to shenanigans.
Stay at home and listen to our show instead.
We shouldn't be telling people to do that. But okay, so our prisoner of the month, you've probably heard about the UK Shack 7. Basically, on Wednesday, 21st January, 7 activists from the campaign Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty, also known as Shack, were sentenced to a total of 50 years in prison after they were found guilty in December 2008 of conspiracy to blackmail the HLS, the Huntington Life Sciences. Heather Nicholson was jailed for 11 years. Greg and Natasha Avery sentenced to 9 years each. Gavin Medhall, an 8-year prison sentence. Daniel Wedham, jailed for 5 years. Dan Amos and another were both jailed for 4 years. So we've got some information for you if you'd like to send letters of support. Natasha Avery, you will be able to get this information from our website, but basically it's NR8987 and Heather Nicholson VM4859 at HMP Bronzefield, Woodthorpe Road, Ashford, Middlesex, TW15 3JZ, England, also known as Zed, England. And Dan Amos is VN7818. Greg Avery is TA7450. Gavin Medhall is WV9475. And Dan Wedham, WV9474. At HMP Winchester, Romsey Road, Winchester, SO225DF, England. And so that's it. And now we're going to go into an interview with Jen from Climate Rush.
Hey Jen, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
It's me and Adam on the mics here. So you've come in to talk to us tonight about Climate Rush. So I suppose the first question to ask would be, who are yous?
Well, I guess we're a really quite diverse group of people. We started up in October. We had a big rush on Parliament on the 13th of October, and we are inspired by the suffragettes. So kind of looking at the sort of history of direct action in this country, going back for, you know, hundreds of years, and it's a really rich history, and we're really inspired by that, so we want to make that live today and also reach out to all the people who are inspired by that who might not be involved in direct action sort of already. So that's where we're going at the moment.
Cool. And obviously, I mean, you're trading on the name of suffragettes in certain respect, and they were, rightly so, justifiably so, quite famous for their direct action as such. Do you feel that you're taking on the next mantle, the next step of that in relation to climate issues?
Well, I guess it's kind of an honour to be considered alongside the suffragettes, and if in any way we can emulate them and achieve what they achieved, then that would be just absolutely wonderful. I guess what's interesting about the suffragettes as well is that they were part of a whole sort of counterculture movement in Edwardian times, which isn't necessarily realised today. I think people think today, Edwardians, they were all about the sort of starched collars and tea and conformism. But actually, if we look at our society today, a lot of stuff that we really value and perhaps some people slightly take for granted, like sort of anti-slavery. Well, anti-slavery was just a bit before, but sort of. Just basically the assumption that everyone is equal in this world and that we need to strive for justice.
So civil rights.
Yeah, civil rights, definitely. And now, especially, all these issues are being joined up, civil rights and the climate and climate justice, all coming together, and I think more and more people are seeing those links. So by being quite a broad movement, we hope to sort of draw those links and get them increasingly in the public eye.
Cool. You mentioned Edwardian times being stiff collars and cups of tea. a big fan of tea myself.
Tea's great.
but I suppose that's kind of in some of your direct actions, at least you've sort of taken an emulation of that in that, for instance, I've talked about the costume, perhaps there's a large costume element to it and a rehashing of the sashes. That type of thing as well.
Well, I think the sashes are brilliant. Alice, who is just a wonderful, wonderful person, sat for hours and made every single one of those sashes, screen printed them. And yeah, no, big love and respect to her for doing that.
Woo,
and
yeah. I have a sash at home, so cheers.
Yeah, me too. I think the sashes are great because they're just such a visual thing, and you know, you can do like a mass action and just network it, put it out to loads of people, say come along, it'll be fun, and people can show up and you can just give them a sash, and immediately it creates like a visual unity, which I think is really strong. But yeah, we love the tea. We love the costumes.
No harm in loving tea, I suppose, in that regard. Yep. I suppose you've mentioned then, I suppose, you're drawing into historical elements, but you're trying to bring in, I suppose you're trying to bring in a different audience as well, I think, just based on looking at how you present yourselves.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're sort of going for the big issues, ones that Climate Camp's picked up, ones that Plain Stupid's picked up, and the movement's picked up. Generally, a lot of people doing a lot of work to sort of bring coal to the front, like forefront, to bring aviation to the forefront. But I think something that Climate Rush does is that it does go for this, you know, kind of quite civilized tea and starch collars image, and it's also, you know, child friendly, and I think that's worked really well because we can put on a mass action, which gets press coverage, but also it's friendly and it's not too difficult to get to, and it, you know, we welcome like everyone, even Tories.
Even men as well, though, I believe.
Even
men.
Of course, like where would women be without men, you know? It wouldn't be great. Men are cool. Men are wonderful. Yeah. We love men. Yep.
Don't know how to agree with that one.
In terms of your actual demands, though, what is it that you hope to kind of achieve, kind of tangibly?
Well, we're focused on climate change, so it's kind of the big headline issues in this country at the moment, but also globally. Like, we're just starting to draw up like our year-long strategy, hopefully. So coming up to Copenhagen. That's the big one, very excited about the climate caravan to Copenhagen. I think that's going to be great. But generally, what our demands are, obviously, no new coal, no airport expansion, quite focused on the Green New Deal as well, and that's a personal thing I'm very interested in as well. That's something I'm working towards, sort of outside of Climate Rush. And I think that's a big one in terms of current like economic climate. If we could actually go to people, look, okay, you know, this, everything is linked up, and that's something that we're doing as well, trying to, with our different actions, you know, RBS, Coal Awards, Heathrow, Parliament. We're trying to sort of say, you know, all these things are linked up, and I think that's what people are doing, and that's what increasingly even mainstream media is doing. So I guess mainly it's focused on climate change, but also generally justice for everyone.
Cool, lofty aims, worthwhile going for, I dare say, of course.
Yep.
So just looking at what you guys are doing as groups and such like that, and so what have you got coming up for the future? You're talking about a year. You're talking about working out long-term plans.
Yes. Well, that's. I mean, basically, Climate Rush is an open group. So, if you want to be involved, contact us. And if you want to be involved in developing a year-long plan, then contact us. Come along. You can come along to my house and have tea. It'd be fun. in terms of a year-long plan, I guess it's sort of the big things for the climate movement in the next 2 years. So we've got, you know, green light for Heathrow expansion. There's a lot of work being done on that at the moment. We're going to look to fit in on that, but also keep the heat up on the anti-expansion front generally. Biofuels is a big one. May very well go down that line. Something I'm interested in personally is actually going down the sort of Reclaim the Streets line of things. So an idea that I think would work really well is to basically do mass actions, which is what the Climate Rush does. But in order to get around the idea of police protests, you could do like basically network it, but network a party line, so like a one mobile number, and have that switched off, and then say phone that number at a certain time, and then change the voice answer phone on that number to get people to all converge on one location at one point, and you get all the activists arriving at the same time as the police, and you could have a certain amount of people who were pre-warned. And so hopefully like we'll be doing something along those lines, or if not, then get in touch, info@climaterush.co.uk, if you're interested in that. Let's cool. make it happen.
Well, hopefully the police aren't listening now.
Well. No, parties aren't illegal. We can have a party
not
at
yet.
Our house.
Something I'm sure they're fast working on.
Yeah.
Cool. So I think one of the other things I've noticed actually about Climate Rush as it's been going on is there's been some international and quite disparate actions around as well. Is this something that you are networking internationally?
I guess that's something we could develop on. Obviously, we need to build international links now, and there are international links on, you know, which are feeding into a lot of campaigns, especially converging on Copenhagen. But I think we need to think beyond that. And yeah, if we're going to make this work, then you know we need to actually look beyond our own backyard, our own country, and actually try and you know build a really strong coalition and make that strength apparent to people in power.
Cool. So I suppose just what's, if people do want to get interested, I mean, you sound like a very open group in relation to that, and you seem to have things going well on nationally as well. I noticed you have some visitors.
Yeah, there's loads of different groups. Basically, if you like suffragettes and if you want to do stuff which ties in with our main aims, then...
Which are
like no new coal, no airport expansion, Green New Deal, and...
Down with the government.
I wouldn't push it that far. Like, I think there's a practical element. Like, there are anarchists amongst us again, but we're not all anarchists. We're focused on climate change mainly. There's the Manchester Climate Rush. There's Southern Climate Rush. Again, email us. Like,
how do we do that?
info@climaterush.co.uk.
Cool, and you're on Facebook as well. I was at a protest and everyone kept coming up and saying, go to the climate.
Yeah, Facebook's great, but it's also horrendous, isn't it? So, you know, great, big up Facebook, CIA controlled, wonderful.
Cool. Right, thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, pleasure.
We look forward to speaking to you, probably get some more of your stuff that's going on.
Wicked. Yeah, come along, we'll email us, get on the email list, and next big mass action will be really good fun. Come along.
Cool, right, check it out on the website. I'm sure we'll have a link to it up on our own site as well, so people can look that up. So, Adam, we're going to talk about...
Hello, yes. Oh, the...
Jarlswood Demo.
Jarlswood Demo. Yeah, on Saturday the 21st of this month, there's going to be a demonstration, I believe, starting from Bedford Town Centre. I think Bedford's only about a half hour away from London, actually, I'd say, I think.
You're asking a foreigner here.
it's going to be focused on the Jarlswood Detention Centre, which has been open for a number of years, and there's already been a number of hunger strikes and protests by detainees there. And the demo is also to protest against the building of a new detention centre, which will be near Gatwick, near Tinsley House, I think it's called.
Which for 400
is,
people.
Which is, yeah, one of the new centres which has got very high capacity. And I think, is it Jackie Smith will be attending that? Will be attending that opening.
Lock her up in it, don't know.
Unfortunately not. So yeah.
Good old Wacky Jackie.
It'd be good if some people from London or from wherever else across the UK could get down and show their support to the people inside.
Fucking A. Cool. So next up, we're going to have a track. I'm not sure who we're going to listen to now, but I think we're going to have a little wee punk track.
Yeah, it's the Australian punk track. It's like 2 minutes long.
Standard issue.
Get away, get in the grab and save! your majesty.
Yeah, that was Missing Teeth by... Or sorry, that was David Bain by Missing Teeth, an Australian punk band. So next we're going to listen to an interview I did with Vitsa, who is just on one of the Sea Shepherd...
Big, Steve Irwin.
Yeah, the Steve Irwin, named after that old crocodile hunter, R.I.P., I guess. I was just asking him about his experience and stuff, so here we go.
So, first off, are you glad to be back on land?
Yes, I am really glad to be back on land. I'm also, it's kind of sad to leave the ship. It's like you work on the ship really hard, and it's like a really solid crew. Everyone, you know, has to work together really well. So I was there for nearly 6 months, and, you know, you work and sort of struggle together. So it's like a real bond you create, and in some ways it's really sad leaving. I kind of want to go back. Yeah, so the difference between Sea Shepherd and other marine conservation organizations really is that we focus on law enforcement. So we are like in some ways self-appointed law enforcement organization. So there's lots of laws and regulations out there to protect ocean and marine wildlife. Even the International Whaling Commission has for many years made up all these rules and regulations and all the treaties to protect whales and, you know, but nobody is enforcing them. In fact, Sea Shepherd is the only organization in the world that enforces the laws that the International Whaling Commission makes, because they're blatantly broken by Japan, by Norway, by Iceland. So we are an organization that really goes out to sea with the aim of intervening against illegal operations and stopping them. And the reason I got involved is really, like, I do carpentry work. I'm a carpenter, and I have a friend who works on board the ship. And when I heard they needed people, I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll sign up and see what happens. So that's what I did, and yeah, I was there for nearly 6 months, and we went to Antarctica and sort of tried to intervene with the Japanese whaling fleet there, and yeah, and that's really where things started happening. We, in total, the campaign's just over, and we went back and forth to Antarctica twice, and we managed to stop them for about 5 weeks solid. We sort of stopped the whale hunt there. So that's costing them a lot of money, and at the same time, it's bringing the issue into the sort of, you know, public knowledge. You know, the more people know about it, and with the help of media, it's really, you know, that's really what's going to stop the whaling. Yeah, it's kind of twofold. On the one hand, governments and states are very quick at you know, agreeing to treaties and you know, and drawing up laws, but they're not prepared to put money aside to, for example, get their navies to go out and, you know, enforce regulations. And really, in international waters, you know, these are waters that are owned by everyone, by the international community. And the United Nations, which is the only really international body that deals with, you know, sort of intergovernmental kind of rules like these, there is no enforcement in terms of, you know, marine protection. In fact, there is no sort of environmental policing going on at all. And I think if you look at the Japanese whaling fleet and the whaling that's happening in Antarctica, it's really also to do with Australia. You know, Australia should be upholding these laws. The Australian Navy should be doing the job that we're doing. We're in effect doing their job. And the real sort of thing is, it's become very apparent that, you know, just before the Labour government got elected in Australia, they made big promises. They said, we're going to stop the whaling. You know, we've had enough talk. We're going to shut it down. You know, they're even whaling inside our own territory. Inside around territorial waters in Antarctica. So there was a lot of talk, and, you know, and people got very excited, but it all turns out to be misleading and false, and in fact, they're not doing anything, and in some ways they're doing less than the previous government. So it's with Australia and with the Japanese whaling, which is very much supported by Japan as a state, it's really become very apparent that the government in Australia decides to disagree. And it's really, like, we agree to disagree, really trying to not hurt sort of trade relations with Japan. It all boils down to money. You know, the money in the end is more important than caring for an endangered species that are out there in Antarctica. Of course, there are some people and groups around the world who wail, you know, on a very small scale. And that's not what we're currently, our campaign has nothing to do about that. It's to do with Japanese whaling. It's an industry that was owned by two large mafiosi family in Japan. It's since been lost a few years because it's been very difficult for the whaling fleet to keep making the money that they need to be able to sustain, to keep their ships running. You know, the whole industry is nationalized. In fact, it's Japan's government that continues to pour money into this to keep it going. And it seems really strange because they're losing so much money at the moment. Economically, it's not going very well. It's only really the older generation in Japan that consumes whale meat. A lot of the younger generation aren't interested. And it's really become a bit of a, you know, Japan doesn't want to be seen as giving in to sort of demands from the West. And it's kind of become this pride issue. But, you know, so in that sense, the whalers that are out there, yeah, of course, they're making good money because, you know, it's dangerous work. Those oceans and those seas are very dangerous. It's dangerous work. So they're making good money. But to say that it's anything indigenous, it's definitely not true. If you look at the history of whaling in Japan, like, Japan has a very, very long history of whaling. And that's really to do with coastal whaling around the coastal waters of Japan. And it's after the Second World War, really, when America, with help from America, this sort of industrialized whaling was introduced because it was a very cheap way of feeding the Japanese public that was pretty much starving. So with help from America, that was kind of introduced. And since then, on and off, it's kind of, they've had larger quotas and smaller quotas. And really, in the last 5-6 years, they've been increasing their quotas. And that's kind of why, besides Greenpeace, it's now really mainly Sea Shepherd that's every year going out there. And we vowed to go out there until the whaling really stops. There's a few things, really. It's kind of twofold what we do. First of all, it's like, by us physically being there and by us being in the way of the ships or being near the ships, it pretty much means they can't whale because they have three harpoon ships and a big factory ship, and those ships need to basically sit still in the water, and the harpoon ships need to be able to transfer whales. So for the operation to run, they need to constantly, the ships need to meet up and, you know, and that's kind of difficult, even if sometimes the weather doesn't even allow them to do that. So by us physically being there and being in the way, that's one thing. Secondly, because we're a law enforcement organization, we take it a step further. We actually intervene. We might push a ship out of the way. You know, we are very serious about sort of our interventionist tactics, if you want to call it that. So on a practical level, things we use butyric acid, which is like a rotten butter, which comes in bottles. So our captain, Paul Watson, he might order us when we come near a ship to deploy that. There are things like smoke bombs, and another thing we use is called a prop fowler. That's like a big line which is dropped from a small speedboat kind of in front of a whaling ship. And if the ship goes over that, and the rope gets entangled into its propellers, and it shows the ship down. In the past, we've also used the boarding technique. Last year, two people boarded one of the harpoon ships to deliver a letter, which basically stated that they're operating in those waters illegally, and we asked them to leave the area. So, yeah, there's a variety of tactics. And on the one hand, I think it's really to do with physically intervening, costing the money, and practically stopping them from killing as many whales as they want to. So actually saving lives. And on the other hand, of course, all the campaigning we do and the stuff we get up to creates media attention, and that in the end is really going to hopefully sway public opinion towards stopping whaling. Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think it's really, this campaign is in some way, and I think a lot of the crew would maybe in some way agree with that, is like, this is in some way very symbolic. It's like, whaling is a very popular issue. It's easy to create sort of, you know, public awareness around Wales, and now it's an issue that's been going on for a long time, and people are happy to support that. And in some ways, this isn't just about Wales. This is about bottom trawling, it's about long lining, it's about all those really destructive methods of fishing that are going on right now. There's like millions and millions of tons of fish. It's just swept out of the ocean every single year, and it's, you know, it's out of sight and out of mind, and it's really, people can't see that. And people would never, ever tolerate the sort of same destructive ways of fishing that's going on in the oceans. They would never, ever tolerate something similar on land. And people, you know, people don't really realize that if the oceans were dead and if marine wildlife would simply disappear, which the latest sort of figures show that would be in about 40 to 50 years, like the sea would actually be dead and all the fisheries are being collapsed. That has a massive knock-on effect to life all around the world, you know. Like all these ecosystems, you know, everything's interdependent. We can't just suddenly, you know, take a bit out of it and then just, you know, think things will continue as they go on. So I think in terms of our campaign, it's like, I think what we're really trying to do is, on the one hand, Sea Shepherd's been out there for a few years. We're trying to keep the pressure up. You know, we're continuing to make them lose money, like millions and millions of dollars. Last year, there were 500 whales short of their quota. That's half the quota, and they came back saying that they've lost $70 million. You know, that's those kind of amounts. Are, that's a big deal. And by sort of sustaining that year after year, you know, hopefully we'll be able to sort of economically drain them. So in that sense, it's really about stopping the Japanese whaling activity in Antarctica. Because where the whaling is a whale sanctuary as well, you know, it's like, this in some way is, you know, if we can't sort this issue out, like this specific situation in Antarctica, is there hope for all the other animals and all the other, you know, things that are going on? But I think really, if we were to be able to stop the whaling in Antarctica, which we will, then, you know, we'd celebrate and we'd celebrate a great victory. But the next day, we go back to work, and there's so many things to do, protecting dolphins and seals and sharks, and, you know, there's, yeah, in some ways it's a huge problem, and it's not just us that's going to do it, you know. The public needs to wake up to the fact that all this talk of sort of sustainable fishing and, you know, and people need to really, you know, be made aware of it, and they really need to actively, you know, seek information and sort of get involved. And we are seeing that, you know, there's more and more alarm bells ringing, and especially from the sort of scientific community, they're really saying, you know, this is an issue that really needs to be addressed, because it's really going the wrong way, and if we don't do something about it soon, then it's only going to get worse. At the end of the day, I think really for policy makers and, you know, the sort of people in power trying to police what others are doing, it's really, they just need to wake up to the fact that they can't ignore all the things that are going on anymore. There's so many things going on with animals and with the environment, you know, and people are waking up to the fact that, you know, this should be enough. You know, the sort of industries are getting more and more industrialized, and, you know, it's just the way people treat the environment and treat the animals that are near to them, it's just outrageous. So I think really, I think that there'll only be more people who are sort of waking up to these issues. And in some ways, yes, the laws are put in place and there is like a massive crackdown, but in some ways I only think it'll sort of fly back in the face of the people that are sort of trying to protect those industries. At the end of the day, the people that are passionate and the people that are, you know, wanting to stand up and be active, those are the people that are going to make a difference, and they will do regardless of, you know, of what sort of put in their path. But yeah, it is difficult, I think. You know, a lot of people are sort of feeling the heat in that sense. So in some ways, I think it's important to sort of acknowledge that and support each other. And also think, for me personally, I see a really big overlap with animal rights, with climate change, with social issues, with environmental issues. You know, a lot of these issues are sort of intertwined, and it's really important for people to don't forget that, to don't sort of sit in their own little bubbles and little groups. You know, it's really important to acknowledge that that is pretty much one struggle we're fighting, even though we sort of focus on different details. of this struggle in some ways. That's what I would say. I think that's really important that we acknowledge the diversity of the movement in that sense.
Yo, well, thanks to Vita and Chickpea for that. Very interesting. Well done, Vita, for going out on the ship like that. That was mad. Seriously, like, he was the ship's carpenter. It's brilliant stuff. Them guys kick ass. A matte black painted boat as well. Proper anarchist style. What colour boat would you like? I'll have a black one. Anyway, we're going to have another competition. Spur of the moment type of competition. And tonight's question is, who is the only African nation in the G20? All right, so answers on a postcard to Dissident Island, care of Lark, 62 Fieldgate. Only kidding, no. If you can email us at dissidentisland@riseup.net with the right answer. But send us a postcard too, actually. That would be really nice. We'd like that. But you need to send an answer to us to this competition before 11 o'clock. Before 11. Right, so who is the only African country in the G20? And big shout out to everyone outside of Nottingham or on the way there, outside of city limits. See you later, lads. And a big thanks to Patrick for tonight's show. If you heard the fire crackling in the background, Patrick was in charge of the poking stick and the wood. And kept us going for the whole night behind his little console of computers. So next up, we got Feedback. It's going to give us some IDM, some Game Boy dubstep. And yeah, take it easy.
some more Game Boy madness. Chlorine.